Spotlight. Good evening, listeners, and welcome to today's Spotlight. I'm Lalima Aneja Dang, and today we shall be discussing about current scenario of West Asia conflict and its implications. Our expert is Anil Wadhwa, former ambassador. Welcome, Ambassador Anil Wadhwa.
Thank you very much.
Well into its 16th day, the West Asia conflict continues to rattle the world, be it the energy crisis or the markets. How is India coping with its ramifications? Ambassador Wadhwa, how would you explain the current West Asia crisis?
If you look at the beginning of this conflict, I think this is a war which involves Iran that erupted in early 2026 this time. I would call it the third West Asia crisis. It actually represents one of the most consequential geopolitical crises in the Middle East in the recent decades, because it began as a confrontation which was centered on Iran's military capabilities, and the regional posture has quickly evolved into a wider conflict with implications for global energy security, for maritime trade, and for regional alliances. If you look at the causes of this particular conflict, of course, there's a long history to it, but it's built on the structural tensions in the Middle East. The first driver, in my view, is the confrontation over Iran's nuclear program. And for years, the United States, Israel in particular, and also Iran's neighbors have believed that Iran has steadily expanded its nuclear enrichment capability and, of course, its missile programs. So from the perspective of Israel and many Western countries, this created the possibility that Iran could eventually acquire nuclear weapons or reach a threshold capacity that would fundamentally alter the regional balance of power. And the second factor is Iran's regional strategy, because over the past two decades, Iran has developed a network of allied armed groups across the Middle East. And these groups operate in Lebanon, in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, forming what Iran calls the axis of resistance. Now, of course, this network is being degraded as we speak, but this network provides Iran with strategic depth and the ability to exert influence across the region without direct conventional confrontation. And the third factor is the erosion of deterrence, because repeated cycles of covert attacks and cyber operations and proxy confrontations gradually lowered the threshold for escalation. And the crisis escalated into open confrontation following a series of military strikes on Iranian infrastructure this time, and also military installations, which then triggered an Iranian retaliation and widened the conflict, because Iran thought that the best way to widen this conflict was to hit the GCC neighbors and the Arab neighbors, who actually had United States and Israeli installations and institutions on their soil, including the military establishments. So the war is not an isolated event, but actually a culmination of years of strategic rivalry, of mistrust, and shifting power balances in the Middle East.
Good to give us some background, Ambassador Wadhwa. But how do you think the conflict has evolved? Today only we heard that there were drone attacks close to the international airport in Dubai. How is it going to impact the markets all over and the whole geopolitical situation? It doesn't seem to be dying down. It just seems to be escalating all the time. How would you explain the evolution of the war?
So the conflict has developed along several interconnected fronts. And first, of course, is a direct military confrontation between Iran and, in this case, United States and Israel. And that involves missile strikes, drone attacks, and targeted operations against military infrastructure on both sides. And the second front, which Iran has opened up, is also the maritime domain, particularly the strategic waterway, which is known as the Strait of Hormuz. So this corridor connects the Persian Gulf to the global ocean system, and it carries a substantial share of the world's oil and liquefied natural gas exports. So disruptions to shipping through this route have already had significant consequences for global energy markets and maritime logistics. And of course, this has been compounded again by the insurance companies not coming forward and willing to insure the goods which pass through the Hormuz Strait. The third front is the regional theater, where various actors are positioning themselves very carefully in order to protect their interests while avoiding direct escalation. So in my view, the situation remains very fluid, very uncertain. And while the conflict has not yet escalated, I would say, into a full-scale regional war, the potential for such an escalation remains very, very significant. And going forward from there, one of the most immediate consequences of the conflict has been the shock to global energy markets, because a large portion of the global oil and energy gas exports passes through the Strait of Hormuz, and even partial disruption to shipping through this route have already contributed to rising oil prices and increased volatility in the energy markets. But beyond oil and gas, the war is also affecting broader global supply chains because the Gulf region is a major supplier of fertilizer, petrochemicals, other industrial inputs. So disruptions in maritime transport, therefore, affect the agricultural production, food costs increase, food production become more expensive, inflationary pressures spread across global markets, and then air transportation has also got affected. Conflict zones, increasing operational costs, and thereby affecting global aviation networks that rely very heavily on the Middle Eastern hubs. That's the sum total of it.
Right. When you talk about the Strait of Hormuz, that's a very sticky point because closing of that Strait of Hormuz is actually posing a threat to the entire world. As you said, the costs will escalate. Post, like in the case of Trump tariffs, we had many FTAs with many countries and we diversified our resources. Similarly, do you think that we are now poised to get fertilizer and other petroleum products from other countries? And how is the government now tackling the energy situation in our country?
For India, the consequences of the conflict are particularly significant for economic growth, for energy security, and the diaspora interests, because these are all closely linked to the Gulf region. In energy security, of course, India imports a substantial portion of its oil and gas from the Gulf. So the rising oil prices had direct consequences for inflation, for fiscal balances, and economic stability. How much that will affect the Indian economy depends on the duration and also how much India can import from elsewhere like Russia. India's trade routes to Europe and the Middle East pass through the Arabian Sea and nearby maritime corridors which are connected to the Strait of Hormuz. So any prolonged disruption would affect India's export competitiveness and also shipping costs. And then, of course, nobody is talking about it in such a scale, but millions of Indian workers live and work in the Gulf countries. Any escalation of this conflict would disrupt the labor markets, the affect remittance flows. So I think in the circumstances, India is pursuing a multi-layered strategy. First, India is maintaining active diplomacy with all the major actors in the conflict, and that includes Iran, the Gulf states, Israel, and the United States. Also, India's long-standing relationships across the region give it the credibility to pursue a balanced diplomatic approach. Second, India is accelerating energy diversification because expanding strategic petroleum reserves and diversifying import sources will help reduce vulnerability if there are further shocks in the region. And I think it's fortunate that the import of Russian oil has now been allowed. The markets have been thrown open to stabilize the oil prices. Third, India is strengthening its maritime security cooperation with partners in the Indian Ocean region and has contacted them already because it wants to protect its sea lanes of communication. It has sent its naval vessels in the vicinity and also at the same time it is in touch with Iran, and that's an important development. Fourth, India is building resilience in its supply chains, particularly for fertilizers, energy and pre-industrial inputs. So Indian missions in other countries like Belarus and Morocco, for instance, they've been asked to scout around for fertilizer supplies wherever these are available. And finally, there is this issue about contingency planning for protection and evacuation of Indian citizens in the Gulf. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, it's an impossible task to evacuate everybody, but at least the two most affected countries today are Iran and then, of course, neighboring UAE. But again, UAE, some pockets have been affected, but not everywhere there is an issue. So I think all these steps are being taken and India will continue to pursue this going forward.
When you talk about Strait of Hormuz, sir, recently we had one ship coming from there. Do you think this is the fructification of India's proactive diplomacy over the last few years?
It does reflect largely its proactive diplomacy. Also the fact that India has been working with Iran closely in the past. It has invested in the Chabahar port. It has actually released the last tranche of what it was supposed to pay for Chabahar before the sanctions kicked in, hoping that at some point in time the sanctions would be lifted and then India could resume active dealings with the Chabahar port. So that is a process that we have to tackle separately once the sanctions are lifted sometime in the future, maybe as a consequence of what happens in Iran or maybe as a consequence of what happens at the end of this current conflict.
Ambassador Vadhva, when the war started, Israel and US said it won't last long, but we know that 16 days have gone by. Where do you see the West Asia conflict heading and its implications for India and for the world?
So I think this war has not gone according to what the United States and Israel thought would happen. Certainly the aim was to, were fourfold in my view, and that was to degrade Iran's nuclear infrastructure and missile capability. Second, to weaken Iran's ability to project power through regional proxies. Third was to restore deterrence and demonstrate military superiority. And fourth was to reinforce the strategic partnership between the United States and other regional partners. But I think what has happened is that Israel saw an opportunity to reshape the regional balance of power in its favor. And the last point which I mentioned, which was to reinforce the domination of the United States with the regional partners, that has not happened because Iran has chosen to widen the conflict. It has taken the conflict to the territories of its neighbors because they house the military facilities of the United States. And so it's demanding that they give up on these military facilities before it ceases operations against them. And that has put these partners as well as US and Israel in a bit of a dilemma because they cannot solve this issue straight away. It'll take months, if not years, to change the situation. And meanwhile, the conflict is kept on raging. This is also the holy month of Ramadan, and for Iranians and for its leadership, I think there's also a religious element which has come into this conflict, because it has now become a conflict between not just Iran and its adversaries, but also it involves religion. It also involves not just missile strikes, but also drone attacks and targeted operations against the military infrastructure of United States and Israel in these countries. And finally, by expanding the front to the maritime domain, particularly to the Strait of Hormuz, Iran has caused sufficient disruptions to shipping, which has raised the costs tremendously in the conflict for other countries.
What steps do you think is the government taking at the moment to ensure that A, the citizens, or rather the diaspora, is safe in West Asia region, and secondly, to ensure that energy security concerns remain in favor of our country? Could you elaborate a bit on this?
So I think you touched upon the right points. I think protecting our energy security and safeguarding our diaspora can only happen through continuous diplomatic engagement between India and all these countries. And I think India is in regular touch. Almost not a day passes now. We've seen this through this conflict over the last 2 weeks or so, that the Indian leadership, which includes the Prime Minister himself, is in direct touch with his counterparts. And we will have to be extremely selective in terms of evacuations of the diaspora, because it's, as I mentioned already twice in this program, it's not possible to evacuate this huge number of 9 to 10 million people from the region. So we have to have priority. And the first priority right now is already happening, which is Iran. So the 10,000 odd students, well, about 4,000 of them had come back earlier, but the 6,000 odd who are left back are slowly being evacuated through other countries. So that includes Armenia and Azerbaijan, for instance. And these batches have started coming back. As far as the other countries in the Gulf are concerned, the UAE in particular, and then if you take Qatar or Saudi Arabia, etc., here, the defenses that are supplied to them through their alliances with the United States, etc., are enabling them to actually thwart the attempts of missiles and drones on their territory or on the military installations of the United States and Israel on their territory. So far, the crisis has not reached that those proportions where complete evacuation is required and people are just waiting for the conflict to end. And on the third front, which is on the front of energy security, as I told you, India has already reached out for diversification. It's actually trying to procure LNG through the spot market. It's also already contracted for Russian oil, which is now available on the market. It's diversifying its sources of imports of fertilizer from countries like Belarus and from Morocco, and it'll look for more countries in the future to diversify all these essential commodities.
Thank you, Ambassador Vadhva, for throwing light on the West Asia conflict and giving your perspective on it. Thank you very much for talking to Akashvani.
Thank you.
Listeners, you may also listen to this program on our mobile app News on AIR and our YouTube channel News on AIR Official.
Spotlight.